Today on Vox Talks Economics, the war in Ukraine means food will cost more. So who suffers most? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember, subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. The impact of the war in Ukraine is devastating for Ukrainians, but it's also having an economic impact in other countries. And one reason for that is that the price of wheat and corn has shot up and it's remained high. New research using a World Bank toolkit designed to model the welfare impacts of food price inflation can tell us who suffers and how much. Guido Porto of the University of La Plata and Bob Rikers of World Bank are two of the team behind this research, and they join me now. Guido, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, team. Thank you for having us.
And Bob, welcome as well.
Hi, Tim.
Guido, you first of all. Why does the war have such a big effect on wheat and corn prices?
Well, I think this is happening because of two main reasons. So first of all, Ukraine and Russia are both big players in international markets for these commodities. They supply, for example, over a quarter of the total wheat exports. Ukraine alone accounts for about 14% of corn exports. And so what happens here is that obviously the war is affecting the production of these crops, but fundamentally, I think it is affecting the distribution and the international trade of these commodities. In a sense, the war is causing like a disruption in trade with consequently the prices of these crops go up. To give you a sense, the price of wheat, we calculated, it increased by more than 50% from January to April. The price of corn, the increase is more than 20%. So I think these are sizable numbers. And then there is another mechanism, which is that the war is creating uncertainty, clearly about the war itself and the political follow-up, but more importantly for our purposes, for the future campaign, correct? The future agricultural campaign of these crops and other crops as well. So this implies that the prices that we see now can remain high or even get higher in the future.
And so in that case, what type of countries might we predict would be hurt most by this? And what type of people in those countries, I guess?
So we are looking at the price effects of the war. And then the countries will be affected in a dual role as consumers and as producers. And then the countries that will be hurt the most are the countries that consume these commodities more. No, they consume more wheat and corn than what they can produce domestically. These are what we call net importers. So in general, net importers will be affected the most, and the more you import of these goods relative to domestic production, the more the countries will be hurt. Now then, when you think about people, countries are a collection of people, a set of people residing in those countries. So obviously the families that will be hurt the most are the net consumers of wheat and corn. And net consumers will be, as countries, families that consume more of these goods than what they can produce. And then, Tim, you should keep in mind that in many of the low-income countries in the world, these are agrarian economies. So households consume and produce the crops simultaneously. Okay, so there will be heterogeneity impacts of the price increases, and the calculation of those impacts is not obvious at all.
So to test this surprisingly complicated scenario, I mentioned that there is this new toolkit. What does this toolkit allow you to do, and what data do you use?
So we recently developed a new toolkit, and the toolkit was designed to precisely study the welfare consequences of food price inflation. In the note we are talking about today, we look at the war impacts on prices, but the toolkit is more general. It can be used, for example, for other shocks or policies as well. But the toolkit is essentially a software, and this software incorporates an economic model with household survey data. The model that we use in the toolkit comes from previous research on the topic that we have done, on the topic of, you know, more specifically trade inequality and poverty. There is even a box column on that. The data is the household impacts of tariff database, which is hosted in the World Bank. We call it the HIT database, Household Impact of Tariffs. And the data contains household survey information from 53 low and lower middle income countries. And the good thing about this is that it represents 1.5 billion people. The data is perfect for the analysis of food price inflation because the surveys contain very detailed information on what households consume and what households produce. And in particular, there are expenditure and income information on wheat and corn. So this is amazing because it is like having data for 1.5 billion people, knowing what they consume, what they produce, how they make their livings, and in particular, how much of all this is due to corn and wheat.
And I note that you're measuring the welfare impact here. What outcome does that mean that you are measuring?
By welfare, we mean in our research, real incomes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what we want to do is basically calculate the change in real incomes, that the price changes that we observe for wheat and corn between January and April is caused. And we attribute these price changes entirely to the war. And then we combine the information on price changes that we claim are caused by the war with the survey information that we have from the HEAT database on expenditures and income shares. The families that will be hurt are those that are net consumers of these products. And in the HEAT database, it turns out that around 79% of the households in these countries are net buyers of wheat and corn. So we have that 4 out of 5 families are net buyers of these commodities, okay? Typically, on average, they spend 3.1% of their income on wheat and about 1.4% on corn. Of course, there is some production of these crops as well, but the magnitudes are much lower. For example, income from corn is only about 1% of the total income of these families, and the income from wheat is 0.5%. And now, on top of all this, it turns out that the poorer households tend to spend an even larger share of their incomes on wheat and corn. So if anything, the impacts will be larger for the poor than for the rich in our exercise. But basically what we do is with all these data, we calculate the monetary gains or losses, no, of the price changes caused by the war for wheat and corn specifically.
Well, Bob, from what Guido's saying, I can imagine where this analysis is going, but give us some of the numbers here. First of all, you modelled the short-run impact, and that would be if no governments or households react to the price changes. In this case, do all countries suffer? Who's affected worst?
The overall picture is quite bleak. So the vast majority of countries lose. In fact, across the 53 countries we study, the average household will lose 1.6% of his real income.
Ooh.
But that number hides like a lot of variation across countries. So there are some countries that are really, really quite highly reliant on wheat and corn imports, such as Armenia, the Kyrgyz Republic, Georgia, where these losses, these average losses, exceed 5%. On the bright side, there's also 10 countries that experience relatively mild improvements in real household income. And that's because they tend to be net sellers of these commodities. But of course, within these countries, there's also winners and losers.
Does this affect households that are on low incomes proportionally more?
Absolutely. So as Guido already explained, how much you're impacted depends on whether you're a net seller or net buyer of wheat and corn. And even though some households, of course, sell corn, like farmers, the reality is that the majority of people in developing countries are net consumers of these commodities and thus sort of see their real incomes decline. But more than that, poor people tend to spend a greater share of their budget on these food items. And as a consequence of that, are more exposed to food price inflation than relatively rich people. And as a result, this food price inflation not only increases poverty on average, but it also increases inequality. So it's bad on both counts.
Yes. And is that effect on inequality worse in some countries? What type of countries?
So countries that are relatively unequal to start with, where the rich spend a tiny fraction of their income on food, will tend to suffer bigger increases in inequality. And that's because the impact on the rich in those countries, think of, for instance, a country like South Africa, is quite limited, given that sort of food is not very important for them. But by contrast, for relatively poor households, food consumption does tend to be an important share of their spending. And so they suffer more. So yes, we see big differences across countries in terms of how disequalizing
you've also modeled a long-run impact, haven't you? Because, of course, when prices change, people change their behavior. And so that assumes that this situation, these price rises persist, people respond to the price changes. Is there still this welfare impact? Is it still increasing inequality within countries?
That's an important sort of caveat that you're pointing to, that so far, like all the numbers we've discussed sort of suggest people don't adjust either their consumption patterns or their income generating activities. That, of course, is not realistic in the long run, even though in the short run, it may not be a bad assumption. So in some ways, you can think of the short run impacts as measuring the exposure, the immediate exposure. But over time, as wheat and corn prices go up, consumers may decide that they prefer to spend on other goods, such as rice. And at the same time, farmers may be incentivized to supply more wheat and corn. And both these mechanisms, both these adjustments, tend to dampen the negative impacts of this food price inflation. Nonetheless, even when we consider these long-run responses, we still find that the majority of countries will experience, on average, reductions in real income. And that reduction in real income is still quite sizable, roughly like 0.6%. So another way to think of this is that by simply adjusting their consumption and income earning activities, households will be able to mitigate roughly like 2/3 of this shock. Because remember that in the short run, we find an impact of 1.6%. But again, this doesn't mean that like all is well in the long run, because some countries like Georgia are still projected to lose more than 4% on average. And what's more, this sort of disequalizing impact of food price inflation will persist for the very simple reason that poor households will continue to spend a larger share of their budget on food than rich households.
Guido, when we spoke a few weeks ago to Rabba Areski about this topic, he did point out that rising energy prices are also having an impact. It's not just the rising food prices. So do you think that this analysis, bad news though it is, might actually be an underestimate of the welfare effects, especially on the poor?
Well, yes, certainly. So admittedly, the analysis that we do is limited to food prices. Mm-hmm. And it is very clear that the war is having impacts on, you know, the cost of energy, oil seeds, fertilizers. And unfortunately, I think most of the households in our data will be net consumers of these goods. So yes, if anything, our welfare impacts will be underestimated. Probably the cost of energy is likely to have a very large impact. The price of agricultural inputs, mostly fertilizers, will have impacts, probably not noticeable now, but in the future campaign. So that is something to keep in mind. But also there is the notion that the both design and the magnitude of the impacts depend, as I said, on whether a country is a net importer or a net exporter of a good. And so there will be, I think, instances where our estimates will be an overestimate. For example, in the case of Nigeria, which is an oil exporter, there are benefits from higher oil prices that we are not accounting for. Mm-hmm. So there is that. Also, there are other channels, no? Tourism, remittances, I don't know, transportation costs, and those are not accounted for as well. But in general, yes, I think we can say that our estimates are conservative.
In that case, Guido, we do like to occasionally make our interviewees policymaker for the day. So I'm going to give you that job for somewhere like Armenia or Egypt, one of these countries that is suffering particularly in your data. What are their options? What are your options as policymaker straight away now and in the long run?
Yeah, so I'm not a policymaker, certainly, but
it sounds like you don't want the job. Yeah.
So I believe that, you know, policy advocacy has to be done, I think, in a context with a very good knowledge of the political and economic scenario of each country. So I don't think general prescriptions won't work. Now, clearly, the use of existing social protection programs to provide some sort of support for the poor is an option, or at least an obvious way to start thinking about assistance, especially to the poor. But we have to keep in mind that many countries have done similar efforts in the context of the COVID shock. So I guess there might be limited scope for that. As trade economists, though, Bob and I and the team, the research team, I think we would want to advocate for lower trade barriers on top of income support. Now, unfortunately, it seems that countries are doing just the opposite of that. There are at least 31 instances of countries which have actually imposed new export bans. And I don't think protectionism is the way to go. Protectionism may help in the short run, but it will have implications for the long run or for the medium run next year that for production incentives, future prices, and so on. So if anything, I would warn about protectionist policies as a way to mitigate the persistent effect of higher commodity prices.
Thank you very much, Guido.
Thank you.
And Bob, thank you as well.
Thank you.
This is an article on VoxEU. If you want to look into this, it's called War-Induced Food Price Inflation Imperils the Poor. And the authors are Erhan Artuk, Guillermo Falcone, Guido Porto, and Bob Rikers. And if you want to look for the underlying data, then go to worldbank.org and search for HIT, H-I-T, which is the database on which this research is based. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research, and every week we bring you the most important latest research. So if you want to stay informed about the future of the world economy, subscribe to Vox Talks Economics today, wherever you get your podcasts. And you'll find more than 200 episodes now, so whatever type of economics you like, there is a Vox Talk waiting for you.